This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2016, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 5.
Well, good afternoon. Start with a little story that I heard Dr. Dale tell down at Pensacola Christian College on a number of occasions. Said there's three impossible things to do in life. One impossible thing is to climb over a fence that's leaning towards you, to kiss your wife when she's leaning away from you, and to teach a class in the middle of the afternoon. With that said, then he would launch into his presentation, and you had to put your seatbelt on to stay in your seat with his presentation. So welcome to this time of effective administration tips. If you looked at the little description of the workshop, I'll be open to your questions. And you do not need to wait till the end. I am used to being interrupted in the middle of a class. I was made aware of that a number of years ago. The students complained to me that their teacher at certain times wanted to have some type of discussion. And they said, when he wants to have discussion, we can't think of anything to discuss. But when we have a question for him, he doesn't have time for it. You may have found that too. So I will take your question when you have it. I won't make you wait until the end to bring your question, because you might forget about it, or you might say, well, it's not worthwhile asking any more at that point. I will just, I enjoy when speakers introduce themselves a little bit. I won't give you my life history. I think I've been in the classroom for 26 years, been principal administration for 23 years, something like that. Those numbers aren't real important. It's my wife that's in here for the last almost 35 years. This October will be 35 years. Now, I do have a question, a couple questions for you all. How many of you are entering into, just so I have an idea of who I'm talking to, for any of you, is this your first year? I know it's John's first year. Is it anybody else's first year that you are doing this? Okay? John, you're the Lone Ranger. You're
first year for what?
To be administration, principal, okay? Prince, okay? All right? Any of you 5 years or longer into this kind of work? Well, then I'll sit down and let you take over. Okay. Do any of you have the opportunity to just be an administrator only? Or do you have to wear more than one hat? Administration, principal, teacher, //. Okay. All right. That's what I figure. Right. I told Brother Gerald yesterday that I really don't understand, fully comprehend what takes place in your brain when you have an itch. You have an itch, and you take your other something, and you can itch that, or you can rub that, and you say it feels better. Now, I'm not quite sure what's happening in your brain for that to take place. But I think all of you have maybe some itches. You have some particular needs, some things that are going on in your life. And have you ever had an itch that you can't reach the itch? You know, one in the center of your back, you just can't reach it. Well, you might, somehow you want to get that itch. Then this afternoon.
Married, so it's okay.
How's that?
I'm married, so it's okay.
Okay. Poor wife has to take care of your itches. Okay. So what I'm saying is, hopefully, if you have some, want to make it practical, so that we don't just talk about generalities or anything like that in that. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for today. Thank you that we can serve you. And as we give leadership into our classrooms, to our schools, God, I pray that you would give us wisdom. Give us insight as we think about the different needs that our schools have. And I pray you would bless these brethren with wisdom as they go into their particular settings and as they give leadership. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for caring for us so graciously. Through Christ we pray. Amen. Well, on your little outline I gave you there, I want just to look quickly at a couple spiritual ideas, thoughts of that I think are particularly important for us as administrators, as we are giving leadership. And that's what administration is. That's what a principal, whatever your title is, what you are doing in your school. You're giving leadership. I don't know if any of you had these dreams maybe years ago. You're thinking that, well, I just can't wait till I get into a position of leadership. And perhaps now, as you've gotten to that point, you're thinking, well, how can I get out of this? How can I go just be a regular person? Maybe when you first got your job, whatever that was, doing driving truck or something, or being a mason, and you were the mud boy, and you just couldn't wait till you got a little bit promoted in the business. And after a while, there wasn't no more promotion, and you're thinking, now what? And you're wishing to go back. So we're giving leadership. Brother Linford's sharing from the life of David. I'd just like to take two different things from the life of David. And first one there is in 1 Samuel chapter 30, where we have David at Ziklag. And we probably maybe know that that situation there of the Amalekites came and invaded from the south. They burned the city and took away the captives. I'd like to look then at the end of this little discourse. Let's start at verse 3. It says, "So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep." Let's just think for a little bit of what they were facing. Now I know probably, we've gone through different levels of grief and types of things that we've met, but have you ever been to the point where you had no more power, no more energy within you to cry? I guess we would say they were at the end of their rope. There was no way, no place else to go down the rope further. There was nothing they could do. They were desperate. Then it says, David's two wives. I'm not quite sure why this is injected here. I guess just to make it look or tell us the seriousness of it. It says, "And David's two wives were taken captives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail the wife of Nabal the Carmelite." Verse 6 is what I want. And says, "And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters, but David encouraged himself in the Lord his God." As we think about administration, and we are in that position of leadership in the school, David... And I wish I could have been a little church mouse there with David. When, what did he do? How did he encourage himself in the Lord? But I don't think this was the first time that he was at this point of life that he was scratching his, like we do sometimes, where he was scratching to think, well, what should I do next? How should I face this situation? But he had that relationship with God that he knew that he needs to go to his Lord. And he could find that encouragement there. I guess I would just like to encourage you that you need some place where you can go to find encouragement. And maybe for some of us, right here, at a situation like this, is where we can find encouragement. I guess I was pitying myself a little bit yesterday over the weekend. I'm thinking, why did I say I'll give some sessions here? But you know, it did something to me then. I was spent some time down here last evening, just here in the hallway, and people were coming in and registering. We were having some small talk with different people, and I saw people coming, and I'm thinking, you know, they're coming to be equipped. They're coming to be inspired. And it did something in me, thinking, okay, it's not that bad. It's not the end of the world. We can make this work. But thinking about you, when you get back to your own little setting, to your own, you might feel like you're a little island out by yourself, away from everybody else. It's a little bit how John feels in Central California. He's kind of out by himself, not the Anabaptist group here or over there, you know, real close. And you, even where you have lots of people, you can get lost in the world, right? You can get lost among people, and you feel like you're the only one facing these situations. Remember, God knows where you're at, knows exactly what you're facing, and flee to him. I'd like now to go to 1 Chronicles chapter 12, and another point there on my little outline there. Girl, do you want to hit that one switch there? Thank you. Just the types of people that were attracted to David out of 1 Chronicles chapter 12. This chapter has impressed me a number of times to think about, you know, who went to David, as this was a couple of years later than when Ziklag happened. This was a little bit later, maybe 2 years or so after that occasion of Ziklag. We still had David away from his people, away from where God was taking him to, and we see these people that are coming to be with David, and they put him into position then. And it's maybe I'm taking it out of context, but I'm thinking about the idea of people that you as an administrator are bringing around you to assist you and to help you, because you're probably fairly key into, you know, the teachers that are at your school, and you know, who are you bringing on board that are going to be assisting you, because you can't do it all. And maybe some of you have almost burned out because you thought you could do everything, and you can't. You can't begin to do everything. And sometimes I learned the hard way of not delegating soon enough and trying to do too much and get weary in the battle. Well, here in 1 Chronicles 12, it talks about these people that came to David. It says some of these, they were armed with bows. They could use both the right hand and the left hand in hurling stones and shooting arrows out of the bow. These people had abilities. So when we're looking at individuals, are we looking at their abilities? How can these people that we're getting around us, we're not bringing them into us to make us king, but we're thinking about these are people that are going to help in the furtherance of your school and ultimately in the furtherance of God's kingdom. I know I use that term, our school. It's not our school. It's we use that term. Hopefully you understand what I'm saying. It's not our school, but it's the Lord's work, and we are an instrument in this point. to do that. So we're looking for people with abilities. How many in your bygone days thought you would be an administrator or a principal or a teacher? Jacob, had some of you had that idea? Okay. Well, I differ with some people. Some people say that you ought to, you need to find out what your gift is, what your gifting is, and then you work hard just to fulfill that gifting within you. I think there's many times God is going to take us in our little box and he pushes us out of that. He gets us out of the box. I'm going to tell you this. You might say I'm lying to you, but I'm not lying to you because I can well remember it. I was a little boy that my parents forced me to go to school. I was drugged to school against my will. I can still remember crying. I didn't want to go to school. I was a shy, bashful boy. I'm still bashful. But somewhere, and when people found out I'm going into teaching, they almost did a double flip. That, why would I do that? So I think about, when we think about the abilities that we look at people, I think God allows us to see their abilities, but yet, as administrators, then we need to help to guide them. And sometimes maybe push them into areas where they might say, I don't want to do that. And you can be there to encourage them and say, yes, I can see that in you. You have that ability. You can accomplish that. It's not as bad as what you are thinking it's going to be. So there's going to be times that, other teachers will come to you with certain abilities, but I'm sure you face this too. You have a teacher and you say, well, yeah, you're hired for this particular grade, but this is kind of something else that needs to be done. Are you willing to do that? Most of us, even teachers, are wearing a number of different hats and endeavoring to accomplish different things just so that the school will function. So that's a big thing, as I see it, as an administrator, just to be able to help the rest of your staff to blossom and to bloom. Verse 8 talks about they were fit for the battle. They could do that. They came in peace and submission. In verse 18, another group of men in verse 32, it says they had understanding of the time. And probably verse 33 is the one I like the best. It says these men of Zebulun came, it says, which could keep rank. They were not a double heart. So these people that David had around him were men that were, said they could keep in rank. That means that they could march to the command, march to the command of the commander, and they would stay in rank. They didn't just say, well, we want to go this way or that way. They marched the way they were intended, instructed to do with that. And that way, God could use them in a marvelous way for his kingdom. Right? I think on my overhead yet, I guess I'll talk a little bit about that. A little bit about the threefold cord that talks about it in Ecclesiastes. Because of your influence that you can have on the on the school. I'm just going to draw something real quick here. If we think of that cord being God, we'll have the home. Then I'm going to put the church, and underneath that I'll put school, and missions. And I just want to interject of this as you being a administrator. I'm not sure what your setting would be like or how that works. But I think it's very important for us that we're going to be willing to come in subjection to a church, however that may look in your community. I'm sure that could vary from community to community. You know, you could maybe have a group of churches that have the school, or it could just be one church, one school. But I think it's important that we are working together. As administrator, we'll talk about this a little bit later, perhaps, the temptation is that, can we remove ourselves somewhere out here and have our own little thing? Because then we can do, because we have all these ideas, and we want to operate maybe this way, just a little bit different than what the church would ask us to operate. So I just want to encourage you that if you are with a church, that the blessings that can be for you, and not that it's a curse, and you're thinking that you are kept into this little straitjacket, and you wish you could flex your arms a little bit and go elsewhere. So that's just a little extra something here, thinking of that. All right, any questions so far? Yes, sir.
When I look at this type of people attracted to David, I thought of another verse in 1 Samuel 22, talking about people that came to David that said that everyone that was in distress and everyone that was in debt and everyone that was discontented gathered themselves, and he became captain of them. I guess I was impressed by that. We work with needs.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, you need to find that place to find encouragement. You need to surround yourself with people that can help you. You're going to burn out. I think probably all of us have taught, I've been in administration long enough that we've felt that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you need those strong people around you to help, mm-hmm. and the church.
Yeah.
And these were the ones that were threatening to stone David and Ziklag, and
probably. Probably would have been the same ones. Some of the same ones. Exactly right. And sometimes you bring up a good point there, brother, that sometimes it's a temptation that, well, say in a church or in a school, we just want the cream of the crop, because they're the easy ones to teach. We do not enjoy the Johnny or whoever that has come from a undesirable home life that has lots of baggage, and they just, you have to expend a lot of energy into them. But I always think, well, what are we here for? What is our purpose for being here on this earth? another thing with this diagram here is, I remember a couple of years ago, I'm from Ephrata, Lancaster area, we were dealing with the, every January we have a farm show, and that's at Harrisburg. It's not what it used to be, but there's more opportunity. It used to be it was always just during the week, over during school time. And I just remember this one student came and wondered, well, why can't we take off for the farm show? Why can't we just go? And so I gave them this, what I thought was a real good reason why they shouldn't take off from school. And they said, well, that's the same thing Mom says. So, if we can, as a school and as a church, as we can work together with the home, that's we're not replacing the home, but and we're not replacing the church, but we are hopefully working together to bring honor and glory to Him. All right, let's. Any other questions? Any other thoughts? Let's think about our leadership spheres at where we are going to be at be a part of, And maybe I'll just direct you to one of your other, I put a couple extra papers there in the back. Some of those you can just read over. You can just throw them away if you want to. Some things that I gleaned over the years. But I'd like just to point to this here one. This is one of your, there at the back of your handouts about leadership of, you know, what is leadership? And what does leadership involve? And I'm not going to read through all of that, but I like to think of what is the price of leadership. So it says leadership is going to bring loneliness. This is the price that leadership brings. You have loneliness, service. You're going to be serving people as you lead. That brings weariness. With a dedication to serve, it will bring abandonment to that work that you have. And to have that is vision. You're going to have vision to provide this this leadership, or a commitment, we could say, would be another another word for that. I like what this person put down here about our vision. Vision only comes to the man who recognizes what he has to be done now. Once a man lays his life on the line for total commitment to his goal, his life becomes very simple because he now lives a life that compels him to do what he needs to do and ought to do and is delivered from the meaningless existence of what I want to do and what I like to do. So as we think of, first of all, about our commitment to the Lord Jesus Christ, as we follow him, we're not just going to be existing just for the sake of existing, but we are serving Christ. It's not what I want to do or what I like to do, but we are serving him because we have this commitment to following him. And the same thing is going to happen within our in our job as an administrator, as we have a vision for our particular school, and we are going to follow in that way. Yes.
So is loneliness inevitably accompanying leadership? We have a price there, leadership. Right, it's loneliness. Are all leaders lonely? Is that inevitable? To what extent?
John?
I would say it depends on whether you can inspire people to achieve the goals they're set. If they're inspired to follow, you won't be lonely. But that's the hard part.
Yeah.
I think there's times when there's lonely decisions to be made. But hopefully there's an atmosphere cultivated that even when you're facing something rough in your own classroom, that the other teachers will be interested in hearing what your problems are and sharing and giving suggestions.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To you, Brother Howard, is that I think all of us probably face moments of loneliness in the fact that we think we're all alone. Nobody else is facing what I am facing. But as soon as you begin to open up and to share what you're facing, somebody will say, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're going through. And all of a sudden, those lonely feelings, which I guess basically we say is just self-pity, right? Am I saying it right, Howard? We kind of start to pity ourselves with loneliness. You have any comeback?
Issues of confidentiality. You have to make a decision without sharing the whole story.
Right.
And then you get criticized for the decision because you don't share the whole story.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thank you, Howard. So, I don't think we'll have time to look at all those other handouts, so you can read over that. You can throw it away if you want to, or you can file it away neatly in your filing system. All right. Let's think about some of the leadership spheres of, in your administration of what what that may look at. First of all, I have a being the spiritual leader. Do you think about, first of all, I think about how you interact with your teachers. If you don't, I would greatly encourage that at our school, what we do is every morning at the bell rings at 7:45, a bell rings, and we as a staff meet for 15 minutes from 7:45 to 8 o'clock. On Monday, we get together, and I usually share a little something, a verse, some inspiration from the weekend of some type. And then we break up into, I'm thinking it's four groups to pray. Might be three or four groups, and we have a time of prayer. Tuesday, one of the staff will share something. Wednesday, we have a time of singing. And then Thursday, one of the staff will share. Friday, oftentimes a school board member or a minister or advisor will be there to share a little devotional. But we use that opportunity for, at that point, to have just that 15-minute slot where we come together as teachers. And if the other teacher forgets, you know, who steps up to the plate, the administrator, principal, he has something. So I would encourage you, always have something in your Bible that you can flip open to and say, oh, we'll use this. And just like that, lickety-split, you got it done. And they didn't know that you weren't ready, prepared. You had it prepared on ahead. But I use that opportunity to have that spiritual input into the teachers. It also is a little time where we can just make some announcements to them as a faculty. We make very few announcements after school. You know, the students go home, and the brain of the teacher leaves also. Sometimes we'll say, well, we have something important we need to talk about. It's going to take too long for our morning get-together, so we'll do it after school. And we usually plan it a day or two ahead so that they can arrange their schedule if they were going to do anything. That spiritual leader to the staff. Might also be to the students. On Thursday, I'm going to speak a little bit about mentoring young men. They're looking to us, you know, in the classroom of, how do you do a devotional? Sometimes we can get, as Anabaptists, very lax, maybe, when we just say, well, just do it. Well, how do you just do it, Jacob? You know, we think everybody should just know everything that we know, and they are able just to do it. Well, can we nurture them? And are we going to show to them what a devotional may look to? So I would say, you as the administrator, you as the principal, you are setting the platform for the spiritual vitality within your school, and how they will how that will be perceived by the rest of the school. I also have their academic leader. Now you're saying you are the principal, and you're teaching. What I mean by academic leader is, I'm sure not all of you do not find all your new curriculum or have all the new ideas. Probably many of those, you know, new ideas come from your teachers. You know, they come to FB, they go different places, so they talk. You know, teachers talk together. They hear about how about this curriculum or this something that we could implement? Well, some you can, some you can't. You can't. It's impossible to, be able to honor each request. So as an academic leader, you're going to have to be, you know, thinking, well, we're here. This is the path that we want to take. And you might have other people with you. You might have other people that can check out different types of curriculums. Where do you want to go with your academics that are helping to formulate that? But I think probably you as the principal are somewhat the backbone with that, where you're giving that direction. How can you be a student leader in that way? Well, I just put down in my setting, I do not have a classroom where I am, say, the homeroom teacher, that I am responsible for this class all day long. I teach some classes, but I just go into the room, teach those classes, got a maid, leave. So I'm not with a certain segment of students all day long. Now, you may be, so this may vary from your setting, but there are some times where just your perspective can be different than what the teacher's perspective is. I know already sometimes maybe students said or asked me some questions, well, why does this teacher do this? Why do they teach this way, or why don't they do it a better way? Maybe sometimes it could be a bit of a negative feeling against the teacher. And then you can come in with your perspective and to help them see, well, where the teacher's at, why they are doing what they are. And maybe sometimes what the students are saying is correct, then you have the ability to then go to the teacher and give them some good advice of, you know, how they could maybe change something. And sometimes it's, you know, something very simple to change. Sometimes it's more complex. But just be able to be a safe place where students can speak to you in that way. Lest I forget, I'm going to inject something here about the students. If you don't, I would encourage you to meet your students at the front, wherever they enter in. Not that you have to greet each one, but that you're there, that you're visible to them when they come to school. They might come too fast, and you can't shake hands with each one or say good morning to each one, but be somewhere there, not that main entrance place of your school. Now, if you have various entrances, you're going to have a little difficulty, but if you have a main entrance area, I think it's good for you to be visible to your students. I know the temptation. I tell my teachers every year, I say, well, you know, don't wait till the last minute to be doing those things. Be up and be about in your room, you know, welcome your students, have some dialogue with them. So I would just say, you know, it's a good time to just to welcome your students and to say hello to them. Another thing I try to do is, if mom or dad brings their students to school, it might not be quite the proper etiquette to do it this way, but I'll welcome the student and then I'll say hello to the parent, because I want the student to know that I feel that they're very important. So I usually kind of bend down and just say good morning to them, or especially if they're the kindergartners or first graders, trying to make them feel important, then we'll say hello to mother or dad or whoever may be bringing them that time. All right. Any other questions?
You talked a little bit about not waiting for the last minute to do some of the last minute planning. So do you have some practical tips for how to plan ahead and to remember to think about all the things ahead of time when are good times to do like that? Some of us have to be, we have to retrain ourselves.
Yeah. Good question, Jacob. I don't know if I have a pat answer for you, except that if you have a plan book, I know I was taught already, you make your plan and then you work your plan. So maybe for some of us, and that always seems kind of the men that are afflicted with that problem of procrastinating other than quick having to run around to gather things together. I know sometimes when I teach science is one of those things where you maybe need to gather some things together, and I know I've not always done very well in that. I'm not saying that you can't be doing, you know, anything. You know, if you're, say, in your learning center, your classroom, you know, you could be working at something, but not necessarily, I would say, this would be me, you know, not sitting at your desk, you know, reading something that you really want to concentrate on, and there's a bunch of boys back here, you know, tearing things up. You're oblivious to that. You're up here doing your own little thing. I'm not saying you can't be doing anything, but kind of trying to intermingle as much. It's a good time just to be able to associate with the students and to feel their heartbeat. Now, some of you may do differently. At our school, when the students arrive, they go to their classrooms. We don't allow them to go outside. They don't go to the gym and play. Some of you may do that. We don't. It's not that they have to sit at their desk and be quiet. They are able to, particularly the upper grade ones, they are kind of mingling around in the hall, chatting, and some are doing homework and various types of things. But it's not that they are able to go out and bump volleyball or play football or anything like that. So it's a good time where you can chat, say hello, good morning, whatever.
I think that's extremely important. Like the 10 minutes before school starts, greet students by name as much as possible. I remember one student who struggled a little bit with attitudes in the earlier grades, and I made a special effort to tell him good morning by name every morning. And now if I distract or miss it, he comes to me and tells me good morning.
Okay.
And he's just building that rapport with the students and other teachers.
Right. Amen. Good. All right. Well, let's move on then. What are some of your other responsibilities? And I have there responsibilities to your teachers. One of the things that sometimes I don't always think about is you can't expect all your teachers to be exactly the same, because they all have different personalities. I mean, you need to have a certain parameters where they're going to be working in. But I try to tell a new teacher coming in that I'm not going to expect you to do everything exactly like the teacher last year did, because I want you to be able to express to a certain amount your personality. Because we all have our own personalities, things that we think are nice. For me, as good, I'm not in charge of one particular classroom, because I could decorate it for day one, and it could stay that way for the rest of the year. It wouldn't bother me. But I think the students would get a bit bored looking at the same bulletin boards all year long. Next teacher might say, well, every 2 weeks I need to redecorate. Well, we're just different. We have different different personalities. And one teacher taught me that. She's a good teacher. She's been with us probably now 20-odd years, I guess. But we had one of the cream of the crop first grade teachers. But the last year she was there, she was in the classroom for 2 months, and 2 months later she died from cancer. So middle of the year, we brought in a new teacher. And one day I was, we were discussing, I'm not even sure what we were discussing about, and I said, well, this is how, I was trying to give her some help. She was a some like some of us, she had done another job for a number of years and not taught, and fresh in off of a, out of an office to teach first grade. So I was trying to be a good administrator and give her some tidbits of help. And I forget what the discussion was. She said, well, but I'm not Miss Gonzalez. That was a previous teacher. And I said, oh, that's right. You're not. You're different. And not, nothing wrong with it. And she's done well on the, I think I'd be what, 21 years, I think it was 1995 that she passed away. So she's with us. With us yet. What are some of the things that you will be doing to your with your teachers? I just put up there, say schedules. And that's important. And sometimes it comes back to bite me. Of I have their classroom schedules, and that's usually fairly down pat. Of, but they're still at the responsibility of are they when are they having their classes? Are they getting their classes classes in? Are they need help on their schedules? You know, sometimes a new teacher, I try to have the old teacher. One of the things you need to leave at your school at the school is your schedule from last year. Nope, not that we have to invent the whole wheel again and to decide what worked for you. You keep your. We want your schedule, and we'll help the new teacher get set up with that. Schedules. It will be your responsibility to other events that come into the life of the school. You know, you might have a picture day. We need to tell them. You need to communicate to them, or there's something going to happen that is going to interrupt. And you got to find out which is the best way to communicate with your teachers. Some teachers like a piece of paper that they can stick someplace that this is what's happening. This is a change that's going to be coming. Maybe we're having an extra chapel or something that's going to interrupt my schedule. And I'm sure you found this out. I'm always a kind of intrigues me that some of the teachers that we have, they just despise when their schedule gets messed up. They get into a routine, doom, and for me, I think, well, this is happy. Hey, we have something extra. We can do something different, and they're moaning and groaning that it is a change, and now I have to, it's almost like it's the end of the world for them. Not quite, but okay, but just communicating that with them. Probably your responsibility to make up the calendar and to submit that to the school board and getting the school board to be approved with that. How about discipline issues? You're going to have to come up with a plan of how you're going to deal with discipline. I know you have little angels in your class, but there's always going to be some discipline issues. We have a written, kind of unwritten way of how discipline is going to work out with that. We kind of have two streams of discipline, and I'm talking basically of grades 1 through 6 at this point. So we have behavior issues, and then also the incomplete homework. How do we handle that? And that kind of varies from grade to grade, but like with the incomplete homeworks, I think most of them can get about 4 incompletes in a quarter, and nothing happens. But then after that, some consequences. And that's all spelled out. We don't invent the wheel every year that, well, let's see, how do we want to operate with incompletes? We have that all figured out. This is the way you do. If it gets bad enough, then you come, you tell me, and we will work out a further plan if it continues to be a problem with that. Same way with discipline issues. And I try to allow the teachers to handle it, the first, second offense, that they are going to do what they think is best. Might be to take the student out in the hallway or and talk to them. It may be also communicating to the parent. I do tell the teacher, do not wait to come to me till you have all your hair pulled out and you say, something has to happen now. Because it won't happen just now. It didn't become a problem. The process to get to here, it was a process of time. And sometimes the teachers can forget about that and they get to the end and now they're just done. And they want the principal now to snap his finger and fix the problem and it's all better. So I tell them, you work with it, and when you've done one or two steps, come to me. I'll give you step three, and we call parent. Step four, it could be a worse situation. But usually, say step four, I give an option to the parent. Do you want us to, should I say this? You want your child spanked? You want to do it at home? You want us to do it? Or do you want us to do something else? If you let the parent decide what kind of discipline, it usually works better. Because then they have made the decision, they're part of this, and they will feel like it oftentimes gets settled quicker if they are part of that process of deciding what kind of discipline. And don't go home and say, well, those people at Pleasant Valley spank their children all the time. No, it happens very, very infrequently. But I hope it happens at home, but it happens very infrequently at school. I would just say, you know, whatever you feel is workable for your situation, but have a way of incrementing the severity of the punishment. One caution, though, would be try not to take recess or break away too much. Because oftentimes the children that are misbehaving, they're the ones that need that. They're the ones that need to get out there and get rid of some energy and get some fresh air. So don't forget that. One thing that works pretty well is, it interrupts you a little bit, though, too. We've done this of perhaps having a lunch detention where they have lunch with the principal in the principal's office. So if you don't need to be in a classroom and if you're having problems with them at lunch or at recess, so they can have lunch with you. Good time for
having lunch with the president?
Maybe in some of their minds. And even sometimes what we've done is if they've been a problem after, say, at recess time, we will have gotten somebody to have some recess with them by themselves. By the way, they get some time outside, but they're not with the other students and being a troublemaker. So that'd be another option.
I have a question.
Yes?
You said about getting the parents involved with discipline. Some of the situations I've been involved with, I worry more about the parent trying to dictate how the school runs and operates
them. Oh, okay.
And so I would kind of take the opposite approach. Mm-hmm. That when your child came to school, you gave the school the right, the responsibility to discipline your child.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about dealing with a parent like that? Because I would say most of the discipline issues happen with children from those kind of families.
Yeah.
I would tend to have the school take the initiative. Keep the parent very much informed, mm-hmm. especially as we go up the ladder.
Yeah.
I think it's good to have parental involvement and support, but I tend to prefer me taking the decision. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe I was not clear on that. It would be that I would give them two options.
Yeah, I would.
Do you want us to do this to your child, or do you want us to do this? Something has to happen. It's not that we're not going to do anything, but it's your child. Do you want us to expel them, or do you want us to spank them, or do you want us to have a recess lunch detention? Just something you would think are kind of equal and let them, has worked well for us. If it doesn't work for you, then don't do it. Because I know you do have some parents like that, what do we call them, helicopter parents? They kind of hover over to control everything. That can be a problem. All right. Hey, we've got about 2 minutes yet, so we have to leave. Is there any burning question, an itch you have? I'd just like to make a couple comments here. Like with parents, just make sure you communicate with them. It kind of becomes a problem for me at times. You know, I've been there that long that, well, I know what's happening, and, we always do it this way. But you always have new parents coming on, and they don't know what has always happened. So sometimes you might feel you're a bit redundant to communicate, sending a memo home, and you have to decide how you can best get that word to home. We're finding out it's more and more difficult to send papers home with students. For some reason, between school and home, they get lost in the shuffle. So we have reverted more to a little bit more to email, or even spend a little bit of money and mail them to the parents.
It helps if you have the parents on board and they understand the expectations. So I'm curious how many or if anybody has a new parent orientation, a formal orientation for new parents, to share your handbook or that type of thing before the first day of school.
Yeah, we do just a little bit. I'll quickly go over what we do is, say a parent calls up, wondering about the school. We have a package of information we send to them, and they fill out the application. And based on them returning the application, we will then set up an interview with them. And just last Monday night, I had got all the new patrons together, and we went over different issues of particularly over the calendar and just pointed out, well, this is what this means. This is what's happening on these times, and trying to tell them, give an idea of what the parent, what they need to do, how to be involved in the school. That's the way we do it. All right. Okay. Well, it looks like it's 10 of. Thank you very much for being here. I trust that you'll have a wonderful year.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.